From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Oh my goody good goodness. Welcome to 2017 from me, Garth, from The Dice Men Cometh, because this is my first show this year. But Mark, I wanted to start the year with a little bit of a history lesson.
Oh, really, exciting. Garth? That could be interesting.
I believe I'm edumacating you. So on this day, which is January the 12th, 2017, and Mark, what show is this?
It's episode 148, Garth and Leon. So close.
We're almost
to the,
there.
Is it the sesquicentenary, I believe, 150?
Them sounds like big words. So anyway, on this day in 1836... the HMS Beagle, carrying one Charles Darwin, arrived in Sydney. And you know how I know that?
Because it's part of the Robinson Crusoe expansion, HMS Beagle?
It is.
Hooray!
So board games taught me something about history, which is nice. And do you know that Operation Chopper happened on this day in 1962, which was the USA's first military action in the Vietnam War? Now, Leon, do you know how I found that out?
Through playing that coin game I can't remember the name of?
Fire in the Lake.
Get the chopper!
What a great operation name. And this is one for you, Leon, as well. But in 1966, Batman. First aired on US television, starring your favourite Batman, Adam West.
Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na.
And all that reminded me of was the DC deck builder, Batman versus the Joker, even though I must admit that's not where I did learn this particular fact for January 12. But welcome everyone to the Dice Men Cometh on this lovely summer's day. Tonight we have me, Garth.
Mark.
And
I am Leon.
Hello, and we are going to be talking several things, but most of all we are going to start with two, count them two, what we've been playing.
Oh yeah.
Because we are going to be some sneaky thieves, followed by some surviving zombie apocalypse people, is that right?
I think so. It's kind of hard to say.
Yeah, and then Mark, you're just going to get us to spend money, is that right?
Yeah, I've got my Kickstarter update. We've got a few things that we can spend our dollars on.
Excellent. And then finally, or maybe not finally, depending on how timing goes, I want to have a chat about a little poll I put up on our Facebook page not too long ago, which got some very fascinating results. But I guess it's all that and more after the first song of the night with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3.
I don't know what happened there, but the computer decided it didn't want to play any more music. That was Tellywise by Carl Renshaw, a local Tassie act here on the Dice Men Cometh Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Mark, Garth and Leon. Now, boys, we've been playing a couple of games lately.
Have we ever? But what we're going to talk about, first of all, is one of those games that we did play in PAX last year in the distant sands of time in, wow.
When was
the
that?
The halcyon days of 2016, before someone who did or didn't get a golden shower might be potentially in charge of the world.
Oh, no.
Anyway.
Bringing that into picture.
Look, using
explains the hair, to be perfectly fair.
So, look, let's start by talking a little dice game called, not Thieves Market, but Thief's Market by TMG, or Tasty Minstrel Games, which, look, they, putting it out there very nicely, have been very generous to us over the years and have given us a lot of review copies and what have you, so thank you very much in advance. However, this is not one of them because Dice Man Leon actually spent Tasmanian dollars on this game after playing it in at PAX.
I did. I spent cash dollars on it. After playing a dozen or so games at PAX, this was one of the two, I think, that I bought like straight away, like that day. Went, yep, buying that.
Fantastic. So, what it is, let's get to it. So, by Tasty Minstrel Game, Thief's Market, and it's designed by a guy called Dave Chalker. Now, I guess his best-known game would be that little box game, Get Bit.
Really?
That guy.
That's epic.
Exactly.
Well, he's batting 1,000, isn't he?
Definitely. So, where you've got your own little detachable Lego people kind of thing and you're just trying to avoid being eaten by a shark. So, that game has probably been on Kickstarter twice, maybe three times to get either reprints or deluxe editions done because
I've
it
lost
is just
my copy of that.
Yeah, it's just that perpetually classic, suitable for kids, suitable for grown-ups game. So, well done, Dave. Now, this game plays 3 to 5. I'm sure we're going to talk about that because as we get into this, you'll see maybe not 3 and arguably 4. So, this game could not be any simpler. What it is, each of you are thieves. And in the game, you play thieves. So, you've already done the bad work. You've already stolen stuff. You're sitting in a pub or the local establishment, and all you're trying to do is figure out who gets what. Who gets what is determined by a whole series of dice that you're going to roll, and they have one of each symbol on them. You've got some green, some blue, some red, some
white.
Diamond.
Yep.
And then you've got one side that is VPs, and you've got one side that is gold. All the dice are the same, and there are truckloads of dice. What's going to happen is the first player, Leon, do you want to tell us how you became the first player in this game?
The first player, in the book, it says the last person to steal something. So the first player became me, and the interesting story around that is my microphone is... Garth, you go on without me.
Exactly. So after Leon rolls all of those dice and you get a selection of red and green and all that kind of stuff come up.
Which is an amazing feeling, by the way. 14 dice just going blah.
It's brilliant. That first player is then just going to simply choose, what do they want to keep? Do I want to keep some reds, and do I want to keep some blues, and do I want to keep some greens? Do I want to keep all of them? But that's basically the extent of the decision that you make. And then going around the table in clockwise order, everyone else does the same thing. They will choose what loot they want to keep, and it'll go round and round and round.
But Garth, why would you not just take all of the loot?
Well, Leon, it's because, and this is the fun part of the game, everyone bar the first player has a decision to make, and that decision is, am I going to take all or some of what's left in that central pile of loot, or am I going to do what I should do, which is take the loot off player one, or if I'm third player, off player one or player two, because you basically get to choose, what do you want to take? Do I want to take what Mark has already taken?
Yeah.
Or do I want to take the stuff that's in the middle, all of it, or do I want to take some of it? Because the decision you're going to be making relates to what you then want to purchase with your loot. And it's very transparent because on the table you've got at least 5 cards out there which you will then spend your loot on once you've got to that point in the game. So you're always keeping an eye on it. But the whole part of this game is about stealing loot. It's really that simple. And let's talk about that because how much fun when you've got 5 players is it looking at, well, Mark, you've taken those things, so clearly your strategy is to buy this and this card.
Yeah.
But, Leon, you've just gone very simply for, I'm going to take all the VPs that are there and go for points. I don't like you doing that. What do I want to take? Do I want to take something that might progress my strategy, or do I want to screw you guys over, or how can I do both?
And it is that real that dilemma of, I want to take what I want, but I don't want it to look attractive enough that someone else is going to steal it off me.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure if you mentioned this, Garth, but when you take it off another person, you have to give back into the central pool 1 or more dice. So,
yes.
And obviously, usually what you're doing is you're just putting 1 dice back in the middle and rolling it again.
Yep.
But, yeah, that dilemma of, well, if they take 1 die away from this, all of a sudden it's not so attractive. Whereas if I'm greedy and I try to get a bit more for me, all of a sudden that's a really juicy haul and someone is definitely going to steal it.
Exactly. And also one of the other things that you're fighting for is who becomes first player.
Mm.
And unlike what it sounds like, first player basically kicks off at the end of the dividing loot phase where you then go and get to purchase cards.
Yes.
So you're also vying for who's going to get first dibs in the 5 cards that you're going to buy. And because they're all face up, it's very clear to see that Mark, with the cards, the dice that you've got the ability to buy this card or this card or this card, and same with you, Leon. So it's a really fine balancing act between how do I get stuff that I really, really want and how do I also stop you guys from progressing your strategy, because everything is open knowledge in this game with the exception of the VP tokens that you get. So there are very few secrets amongst thieves in this particular case, but it's all about, I don't know, walking that tightrope of progressing your own strategy and screwing over everyone else. And this game is about the size of two iPhones stuck together. It is a very small game.
Yeah, and then so then you've got the cards, and the cards range from turn a face of a die to another face, turn a face of a die into money or into points, and then there's the whole sort of tricky things of, well, if you bought a card that had green in the cost, then you're going to get an extra point. Or if you bought a card that had, money on it, you're going to get to take another turn or buy another card. Or if you get two of these cards, you're going to get more victory points. But if you get one, you're going to get less. There's a huge variety in the cards.
Yeah, it's all about building your own engine. And you might see the cards in front of you that you think that could work well with this card or that could work well with that card. But as you said, since it's all open knowledge, it's then up to everyone else on the table, who is, of course, a lying, stinking thief, to see that and go, well, if he puts that card with that card, that's bad. We've got to stop him, so I've got to do duh, and duh, 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 duh. Because, yeah, that's what thieves do. There's knives involved.
And I really tried to buy a couple of cards that let me change faces of the die so that it wasn't so obvious. Oh, well, I took a green and a red and a blue, so I must be after that card that needs a green and a red and a blue. But then it was like, yeah, but if I don't get the right colours to do the changes, then I can't do that. And I sort of almost like double bluffed myself. I wasn't quite as flexible as I thought I was.
See, I went with a different strategy of just going pretty much straight for the victory point tokens and the odd card that would give me nothing but a few victory points at the end, because by doing that, it didn't really muck around with anybody else. Like by taking just the VPs from the centre, like, there was times when, you know, I was first player, rolled 14 dice and just saw two victory points and just took that. And that left 12 other dice for you guys to fight over. And I thought, they're not going to come after me because you're only going to get one of them because they have to re-roll the other one. They're going to leave me alone. It might not be the best idea, but although, you know, I don't have to spend much brain power on my strategy, but it might work with those guys all fighting out amongst themselves. In fact, in the end, it didn't work.
No, it certainly didn't.
But, well, we were all close, but yes, I did not come first or second or third.
Do you know what worked?
What?
You should maybe ask the winner.
Oh, the undefeated winner.
The undefeated King of Thieves, as they say, because it comes with this little card where the winner has to have a photo taken and submitted to social media, which we did
on our Instagram account.
So please go and check that out. But I am undefeated, 2 from 2. So I never lost a game all last year and currently haven't lost a game all this year.
So it just means you are the sneakiest bastard of a lot of us.
Well, as they say, I am.
I think we knew that.
But look, what I love about this game is how simple, how quick to teach it is, how self-explanatory it is. However, iconography on the cards, I find, still, having played it now twice, confusing, and you still have to pause and go, oh, what does that mean? How does that work? And consult the admittedly very thin rule book, but you've still got to figure it out, which puts a dint in play. Now, that's a minor quibble.
Yeah, that is at least one thing, that there is the book that has every single card in the game on it. It's just on one double page in the book, and they're all alphabetical order, so it is not hard. If you go, what does this, you know, thieves market card do? You look at it, find it, thieves market, this is what it does. So I admit that, it'd be nice if there was some text on the cards, it wouldn't have hurt. But it's not the worst example of this I've seen by a mile.
Yeah, and the other thing, I guess, that I sort of scratch my head a little bit is you've got a player aid card, which on one side has the steps of the turns, on the other side has the symbols for most of the cards. But it was sort of like the ones that it needed to have, which are the trickier ones, aren't on the card. So you find yourself going back to the rule book every time anyway.
Yep. It's best just to go to the rule book and not look at that side
correct.
At all.
Now let's get to the major part of this, which is 3 to 5.
Yeah, so we played it at PAX with our great friend. He's gone from a good friend to a great friend because he's taught us so many games now, Richard. And as he said, he taught us this and it was like, bang, we had it down pat. And with 5, we were constantly stealing from each other all the time. The interaction was really huge.
Yeah, that was us 3 and Richard and my wife, who's just as vicious as the rest of us, which is why I love her and married her. But, we at the pub the other night, so it was us 3 and Trent. And if anybody's listened to this show before, again, they know we like to get the knives out. Especially when it's us 4, we know we don't have to hold back.
That's
we can go
it's
nuts.
It's like a safe zone, isn't it?
But, I mean, it could have just been as well that I was doing my strategy of kind of leaving you boys to your devices. But there was next to no conflict.
Yeah.
Nearly the whole game. Like, there was maybe three or four, I'm taking your pile instead of something from the middle. Whereas when we played it with five, it happened three or four times every
each turn.
Yeah. Which there is like 10 of in the game.
Exactly. Yeah. And that really put a dampener on that experience because, you know, I'm sure for all of us, our memories were all going back to that, that sitting down at PAX and just going, ah, Mark, you've done this. I'm going to take your cards. And Leon, you thought your strategy. No way I'm taking those dice.
Yeah.
And there wasn't that element even with four players.
And do you think it was just the number of dice in that it, most of the time it worked out that we almost all had, I think, like four dice?
Yeah,
or, and the person who wanted a particular set would get three. Everyone else would get four, and the numbers were very easy. Were there, because just remind me, were there dice out of the game?
Yes, but it was only like two, I think.
Yeah.
The difference is like 14 to 12 dice between five and four people. Yeah. But also, there's lots of options for cards you can buy and different combinations with the die. So you're always kind of going to get something.
Exactly.
So it does kind of lead you to go, oh, okay. But still,
but that's a good thing about this game is that you're never going to have a turn where you can't do absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And that's what I do like about it, because there's nothing worse than this kind of game where you sit there going, I've been royally screwed over this round. I'm just going to watch people get further ahead of me. That does not happen in this game.
Yeah, so we haven't played it with three, but I'm ruling that out. I never would.
I have no desire
four
to do that.
We have played. It's not bad, but it's definitely not ideal. But it can be done. Don't turn away from this game just because of that. But five is where it's at. It's not like, say, a Cosmic Encounter, which I believe the base game, without the expansions, why would you do that, buy all the expansions, is only three to five. That game, play never with less than five. Ever, ever, ever. If you've got four people, you've got 10 other games you should play that's going to be better than that.
Now, the other thing I want to say is that for a game all about thieves and thievery and thieves and screwing each other over, it was, in my opinion, lacking in cards that allowed you to screw over people after that dividing loot phase.
There is.
So the dividing loot phase, you know, with five people, you're interacting and taking stuff. But after that point, it's really that solo puzzle of how do I really maximize the engine I've got.
Yeah.
And I think that's where an expansion or maybe a little bit more development or something would have been really, really fantastic. And possibly that's to do with Dave Chalker's gaming history and that kind of, you know, that style. I don't know.
Yeah.
However, I thought there should be more cards that allow me to, you know, throw a spanner in the works to your strategy or do something more screwy.
Yeah, that's exactly what this game needs. The game needs a small expansion. All you need is a deck of cards. Even if it was all cards that are completely screwy or some that are screwy, some that are kind of normal, you would need that. Maybe a couple of extra special die just for a laugh.
Yep.
But adding that, I think, to this game would make it from an already good game to something that a lot more people would get their hands on.
Fantastic. So, look, I certainly put it in the small box good game category.
Oh, it's
I'd
a keeper.
Certainly happily play it.
Yes.
Max it out with numbers. We've talked enough about that. Leon, we're going to have to talk about this other game, is that right? But we're going to do that after a song.
Yeah.
So, Mark, do you want to throw us to a song and we'll come back and talk about the zombie apocalypse?
Absolutely. We're going to come back and talk about a whole lot more gaming right after this.
I get it, right?
Oh, my gosh. That was, and continues to be, not surprisingly, Normally I Get It by Lola Wolf. And before that, before the community service announcement, there was Call the Police by Tropical Zombie.
Or is it Topical Zombie?
Wow, we can make it both topical and tropical. You are still with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. Now, Leon.
Such nerds.
There's this new gaming style.
Yes.
It's called Zombie Survival Horror.
Yeah, it's a new thing. No one's ever been on it before, and this is the first game.
That could be a thing that takes off.
Possibly, or even someone else could come really late to the party on it. So what this game is called The Refuge. It's a Kickstarter game that I just received. It is a family-friendly zombie race game by a studio called B&B Games. They haven't done anything else. They've just done this.
Okay.
Now, I'm just going to read you a little blurb about what this game is all about, and it's on the other page. There is only a little hope for the last few people that have escaped death and the poisonous plague that ate away the rest of humanity. There have been rumours of a place where survivors are gathered in the hopes of continuing existence. Space is limited and supplies are short. Only the first to make it there will stand any chance of survival. It will take an incredible amount of resourcefulness, cunning and strategy to survive the wasteland and make it to the refuge.
Pray. Sounds like someone who hasn't played the game wrote that.
Yeah. Ooh. Anyway, so in this game, you each play as a survivor trying to get to the refuge. So the board is about, I didn't count the spaces, let's say a 30-odd square board, something like that. You start off on one end. Your aim is to get straight up the other end to where the refuge is. But before the refuge, there is a space where you need to have a key. So you need to have that key before you can get into the refuge. And the way you will do that is by searching, because there's not a lot you really do in this game.
No.
On your turn, you've got three things you can do. You can move one space, be it up and down or side to side. You can draw a supply card from the deck, which might have a key in it and might have a special action card.
Won't have a weapon in it, that's for sure.
There are weapons in there that fight off zombies. There's just not as many as we would have liked. Or, on your turn, you can use one of your supply cards to give you a special ability like move a zombie on the board or move diagonally once or go over two spaces or something to that effect. And on the board itself, every space is slightly different. I say every space. There's like six different ones that repeated over and over again.
Correct.
There's the spawn spaces where if you land on one...
Is there six? Didn't seem like six.
I'm going to say that there's the skull symbol, which is the spawn.
Yeah, I'm getting there. Come on.
All right, well, I'll count with my fingers.
There's the spawn where you jump on it, you spawn another zombie on a different spawn tile on the game. These are the ones that are most. There's the most spawn of any other tile. There's the hazard, where once you go on that, you can move any other zombie to another place. So you can move it either out of your own way or into somebody else's way. Ooh. Because this is not a cooperative game. Oh, no. This is a game of pure violence and death for kids. There is a safe zone where if you go there, no zombies can go in there, so you're safe.
Toi.
However,
there is
the switch location. Like every small town that's been attacked by zombies, there's a switch location.
Oh, of course.
So when you go on there, you can switch yourself with somebody that's on a safe zone.
Somehow teleport for some reason.
Yeah, because that's a thing. And then there's the lock, which is right near the end, and then there's the finish of the game.
Yes.
So there's not heaps of different places, and as I said, there's various different ability cards you can pick up which let you steal from other players, use weapons against monsters or whatever.
Can I say it before Mark does?
Yeah.
Think of it as zombies and ladders.
Yes. That's pretty much
it. I wasn't going to make that comment. I was going to say, look, you should look closer at that box.
Yeah.
I think it might not be a G, it might be an S, because this game is definitely refuse, and I'm going to refuse to play it again.
That is a bit harsh, and we'll get there in a second, although I think you've already played your hand. So the game is between 3 to 6 players. We did play it with 3, and it's fair to say we didn't have the bestest of time.
No.
We did not at all, because mainly the game could possibly beat Monopoly in the never-ending category, that if you play your cards right or even wrong, you could just be screwing over each other for ages and ages and ages. Right, so the reason we're talking about this, full disclosure, we've played games before that we've been really looking forward to, and we haven't ended up talking on the show. The reason for that is we're positive men.
We are.
We like to give the positive in everything. This game is not good.
No.
In any way, shape, or form. However, the reason I wanted to speak about it is that there is a place in the hobby for horrible games, sometimes.
Yeah, it's called the rubbish bin.
Hear me out. You're sitting around with a few mates, a movie comes on the TV. It's absolutely horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
You have a great time watching it because you're just sitting there slagging it off the whole time.
Yeah.
Yep.
This game is the equivalent, I think, of a horrible film. So, again, hear me out. Play many other games before you can play this. However, in a certain situation, guys like us that love games where you screw each other around, six people around having a few drinks kind of thing. As I said, the game pretty much never ends, it keeps going. The hilarity of somebody getting so close to the end and then somebody pulling them back all the way to the start. Because as soon as you get hit by a zombie at any point in this game and can't defend it off with any card in your hand, you go back to the start.
Yeah.
Which is not like, you know, it took you hours to get there, but there's a lot of zombies and a lot of people and a lot of moving around. And we played it with 3 and we were doing that a fair bit. If you played it with 6... you would have every turn somebody screaming at the game saying, you're a horrible game, this is horrible. But you will have 5 other people laughing their ass off. And I think that is something at the very least.
I have to say, what cracked me up about this game was the card, I can't remember the name of it, but it basically let you draw 2 weapons back from the discard pile.
Yep.
We never had 2 weapons in the discard pile at any stage. We only saw 1 weapon. And so we were constantly using this card only for half its capabilities because we were so desperate to get the weapon. Because really, apart from that and the riot shield, there was like nothing
to push you to back a zombie.
keep the zombie out. So you just, it was like, oh, a zombie dead. Oh, a zombie dead.
There were still some cards that we didn't see, but then there were things like, I think it was the treachery where one of the cards allows you to steal from another player, and then you have treachery, which is like, no, I'm going to steal it instead, and stuff like that. So, like I said, it's not good.
No.
Oh, no, it's not good. And don't spend your money on it. However, if you could find it, like, really cheap, and you just want a cheeky laugh,
yep.
You know, like I said, people specifically get around to watch bad movies and laugh at them.
Correct. And it has a crap ton of plastic minis.
Yeah.
So, I mean, almost if you get it for the lowest price, having extra couple of bags of minis for something else is worthwhile.
And as I said, this is the first game by this company. The box art is really nice.
Agreed.
The board itself is nice enough. I bought it on Kickstarter because it was a fair price, and also it came really quickly. Like, this was on Kickstarter like 3 months ago, okay. and I've got it already. So the reason we are talking about it, we've played other games that we've liked better than this that we haven't talked about because there was a lot more negative. That there are some positives to be had in the horror.
And look, I guess the thing is, if you start at the bottom of the barrel, you can only go up.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'd like to encourage Floyd from B&B Games. Keep at it, Floyd. Keep chipping away.
Exactly right. And I do love the fact that on the BGG page, it says it plays in 5 to 60 minutes. Because that just shows you the complete random nature of this game.
Right.
That you could just go move, switch, get the right cards, it's game over.
The 5 could definitely happen. The 60 could also extend itself to 360, which would be, again, hilarious to watch.
All right, we've talked about this enough. Should we go to another song? Mark, you'll teach us how to spend some more of that money that I got because Nana gave me $50 on Christmas Day. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3.
That was Branded Left Handed with the song called Safety Doesn't Take a Holiday on Edge Radio 99.3 FM on the Dice Men Cometh. And I can't believe I actually just got through that because I was not paying attention in the slightest. Now, Marky Mark.
We
spend lots of money in like 5 years time.
And I haven't even got my Kickstarter musical intro.
Oh, no. When the love kick starts again.
I don't know
all that. Okay, so Kickstarter, look this. It's fair enough to say it's a sort of quiet time on Kickstarter at the moment, but there's a few things happening, and I want to give us a couple of catch-ups. So we mentioned a couple of times Demon Espionage by Five Tales Games. There's five designers, and one of them is Australian. The rest, I think, are from Singapore. That one's just about to close. By the time you're listening to this podcast, it will have closed. But I just wanted to say congratulations to those guys. It's got a little review from Garth and the Dice Men Cometh on their Kickstarter page. But it's just about to finish with 3 hours to go, and they've raised almost $14,000. Which is 270% funded. And a great example of, you know, you put it up on Kickstarter the first time, doesn't quite work out, go away and do a bit of work and come back, and they blew it away. They funded in 5 hours and they've gone well over.
It's a lesson everybody should learn, to take the positive and then to redirect that into keep going.
Yeah.
And I've actually got a quick story about that. If anyone knows the iOS game called Five Nights at Freddy's, it's a big thing, made millions of dollars. That was originally the guy that designed that. He designed a kids game that everyone said, this is one of the worst games ever made. Those characters in it look horrific. And all he heard was, the characters are really scary, are they?
Yeah.
And now he's a millionaire.
Wow, there you go, Mark. Beautiful. And the second one, I just wanted to give a catch up. A little game called Kingdom Death Monster 1.5. Because that 1.5 bit is so horrible.
Mm.
It ended up reaching $12.4 million over almost 20,000 backers, and it's now the biggest game on Kickstarter ever. Not just tabletop game, but in this field where, you know, computer games regularly get millions of dollars, it has raised more than any computer game on Kickstarter. Blew away exploding at kittens.
Good.
Thank God. And the fact that it's a reboot of their game that was, like, what, 12 months ago.
Yeah, and it's like $300 minimum, and it's not coming out for three years.
And I listened to you guys talk about this a week or two ago, and I've just done some simple maths based on your excellent numbers there.
Yes.
But the average pledge is over $600.
Yes. Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I know.
And something that's going to be arriving in dribs and drabs and maybe as late as 2020.
Yeah, so any of our backers that have backed any of our back, any of our listeners that have backed us, which there must be some of, feel free to get in touch via Facebook or our email or our website or anything, because I want to know why. Because I've spent a lot of money on some miniatures games on Kickstarter before, but I can't see the logic because of the amount of money and how long it's going to take and the fact that there's already editions out there and any which way.
It's just going to be crazy to see what it actually looks like and how popular it is when it comes out. Couple more Aussie connections that are happening right now. I think we might have mentioned this one briefly, but Khan of Khan's.
I can't believe he's mentioned
Khan of Khan's.
You two are old.
So it's a
can't hear you.
Ryan.
I get it. Benedict Cumberbatch in that Star Trek film.
So it's a Reiner Knizia game, but it's got the most fabulous art by great friend of the show and fabulous artist Ian O'Toole across in Western Australia. Of course, did Lisboa and The Gallerist and the new deluxe Vinos. And it's set in the world of Glorantha, which is sort of like a... No, it's not a horror world, but it's a whole mythological world where there's been lots of role-playing stuff. But this is a card game. And not just that, it's a card game. You can pretty much tell by the art, sort of slanted at your younger players.
Like Leon.
And, talk about all the big guns.
Sorry, I was distracted by a bee.
So we've got Reiner Knizia, we've got Ian O'Toole, we've got Glorantha, and it's produced by Chaosium, the Call of Cthulhu people.
It's such a weird combination for what seems to be a very simple card game to have such big names involved in this seemingly very small campaign, because they're only after $10,000, which, given the caliber of people involved,
yeah,
it's almost feels like that side project.
But look, to give you an idea of how it's going, because last night when I was half-assedly researching this, it had almost funded. It was like 9,500. Here we are less than 24 hours later. It's up to 12,500. So now it is funded, still 19 days to go. So look, it may not be everyone's cup of tea, but firstly I'd say check it out for the artwork because it is sweet. But like Chaosium, Knizia, Glorantha, Ian O'Toole, it's got a foot in every camp you can imagine.
I'm just curious as to think whether this is kind of like a let's introduce new people to these names. So, you get people who will buy this for kids and then go and investigate who Reiner Knizia is if they don't know and go and look at other stuff that Chaosium has done and almost as a stepping stone into the gaming hobby.
Well,
I don't know.
It's like assembling a super group and then doing a Beatles cover or something.
Or it could have just been Ian bored one day going, I've just done some pretty cool doodles. Give Reiner a call. Mate, you haven't got some mechanics lying around, have you? I don't know if that sounds insulting, but that could be what happened.
No, and it's definitely worth checking out.
Definitely.
And look, another Aussie Kickstarter, Hexo Roll Dice,
yes!
By Moonmares or Moonmares Games in Sydney.
Is this the thing you backed?
Now,
oh, yeah.
Now, Garth.
Yes.
Ridiculous.
Like, you guys gave me a lot of crap about the spoon.
Oh, the spoon.
Okay, and then you all went and backed the spoon.
My wife made me back the spoon.
Now, Garth.
Yep.
What the hell is it about these hexagonal dice? Because if you ask me, when I looked at this, it's like someone's got some leftover bolts from metalwork and they've stamped some numbers on the outsides.
Yes, they probably have. But I'm supporting Australian Games.
Right.
Who doesn't want some more dice to add to their dice bag? According to the creator, hexagonal things are useful for rolling dice, particularly of the six-sided variety.
Well,
it was $14, including shipping.
Oh, look, it's a very reasonable price.
$15,
they are, I don't know if they're novelty dice. They're sort of, there is a novelty factor.
Hey, there's a B on the screen. I was looking at one of them a second ago.
They've got some runs on the board, though, because did you know they previously made, they're obviously right into the metal stuff. They made a bottle opener.
Yep.
that had a dice, a metal dice that screwed off the end of the bottle opener.
This is so far up our alley.
So,
that's incredible.
I mean, how perfect is that? Is you've always got a bottle opener and you've always got a D6.
It's almost as good as Trent's bottle opener, I must say.
Anyway, it's raised $3,500 and they were only after two. Still got 21 days to go. So if you like the feel of bolts in your hand, you know, hefty metal dice, check that one out. Subterra.
Ooh, I mean, an actual game. Excellent.
Yeah, we just can't get enough of cooperative survival horror, can we, boys?
No, we can't. It's our thing.
This is by Inside the Box from London. It's a tile-based board game where you're exploring an underground system of caves. And, of course, in caves you might find, like, a gas leak or something scary or water or monsters unknown. It's got a pretty sweet little tile mechanic and you're moving around your little meeples, or if you pay a little bit more money, of course, you can get your sweet little miniatures to move around.
So is this Carcassonne Cave Farmers?
It looks like that with horror. But look, they've been after, only after 16,500 poons, and they've raised, and here's another one. When I did my research last night, this had raised 53,000 poons. It's up to 70,000 in less than 24 hours. Yeah, so it's going gangbusters. I must admit, the art, here I am talking about art again, the art on this one does look really sweet. It's hit the spot for survival horror really nicely. And it's quite a long campaign, so it's still got 35 days to go. You can, there's heaps of add-ons you can get with this. There's three expansions already you can buy. As I said, you can add miniatures. And what's interesting is they're not doing a lot with stretch goals, but mostly a lot of it's paid add-ons, but they're not expensive paid add-ons.
And really impressed with the shipping there. It's only £6 for the base game.
£6
shipping. No, that is really, really reasonable.
Yeah, exactly. So check that one out, Subterra. Now, if you're looking for a gift for the gamer in your life, what says I love you any more than a scented candle? Uh-huh. But wait, this scented candle is also a huge waxy D20.
Wacko.
But wait, there's more.
No, I don't believe there's more.
Because when you melt this candle, what do you think you find inside as it boils and melts down?
A potion of mana.
Almost.
Yep. It's another die, isn't it?
It's not one.
Oh.
Not two. What? Not even three, four, five, or six.
Eight.
It's seven. Oh. So it's a complete set of seven polyhedral dice. Inside the candle, before you melt it, metal dice.
I'm buying that.
So you buy that.
I'm totally buying that.
But you won't buy awesome Australian-made metal dice that'll last forever.
Yeah, I've got bolts at home.
And look, you can get different scented candles. So you can get, like, Hidden Blade Black. I don't know what a Hidden Blade smells like. Or, like, you know, Minty Fresh Green or something. So different colours, different scents. And the company that are doing this, Lunar Wolf, they have an Etsy store and they sell, like, geeky sort of candies and chocolates and things. But, look, at first glance, it's like, yep, yeah, it's a candle. It burns for 2 hours. I paid $40. But, you know, a set of a seven-set polyhedral metal dice set is really sweet. So, like, it's really novel. Anyway, you might like to check that one out.
Well, I just had real enthusiasm about that, and I was like, yeah, totally going to buy that. How much is it to ship to Australia, Garth?
It's $23.
On top of the
on top of the $50
which
to
makes
buy.
It Australian how much?
72.
Well, it is. Oh, it's probably weighs as much as a brick. It's a pretty big candle.
So I could buy eight metal dice.
You could buy Thieves Market 2.5 times for that. Which all you right. should, or my copy of The Refuge, which will be up for sale.
Anyway, look, it's worth checking out.
Moving on quickly.
Maybe you've got a friend in another part of the world where it's not so expensive to ship. Now, this one really took my eye. Crash Games, it's a great little game company. They produce quite a few small games. They have got two games, not just one, but two, Backyard Builders Treehouse and Fish Frenzy. Now, here's the thing about this. These guys have been on Kickstarter and they said, oh, we're not really going to do Kickstarter anymore. We're going to become a normal game company. Then they had a little bit of trouble with some bills and they had the games all produced and they've run a bit short of money. And but what I love is they've got on Kickstarter and said, you know what, guys, we're in a bit of trouble. We've produced all these games. We need to pay the bills. So rather than wait while we sell, you know, 10 copies here and 20 copies there, we're going to sell the whole lot on Kickstarter. So it's basically just a pre-order for games that are already made. So it's not even a pre-order. It's just like an order. But I love the fact of reaching out to the community and saying, hey, we need some help. And the community has answered in spades. Mm. I mean, they've only put, they were after $100 because whatever they sold was money.
Yes.
But already it's, they've raised over $23,000 for these little games. And I'll tell you, it's $20 for Backyard Builder's Treehouse. It's $30 for Fish Frenzy. Or if you want to get both, it's $45. Now, for you Tasmanians, it's not a game about a fish and chip shop.
No.
A Hobart icon. But you can get both games for $45. Now, Garth, what you pointed out to me, of course, is at the moment, this only ships to the US.
Correct.
That's right. I knew I'd recognise this because I went on Kickstarter the other day to look at something, saw this and went, you know what? I'm going to back it. Don't care about anything else.
Exactly.
I watched the video, heard the plea. I'm going to back it. Went to back it. Oh, I can't. Okay, fine.
Now, however, they have said that they are having conversations with shipping providers. So given the amount of goodwill and support they've had, I'd be very surprised if they don't get an international shipping option up. However, what they're saying is it may not be through this campaign.
Might be later on.
This is happening like live as we speak. We're just getting the update right now.
Yep.
Look, if nothing else, it's a really interesting look into what our gaming community can do to help out game companies who are happy to put their hand up and say, hey, we haven't managed our money so well, but we've got this amazing game. We want to get it out to you. What do you think?
And I don't know how I feel about it because I haven't actually thought about it personally, but I do like that people like Jamie Stegmaier, who from Stonemaier Games, have gone out and publicly supported it. Rado has backed it and he's done a little video about it. So clearly the guy from Crash Games is well regarded within the industry. Stuff happens in a hobby such as ours where there is a small group of people who make money and there's a lot of people who make money, then lose money, then make money and lose money because of the fact that it costs a lot of money to produce games and you then need people to buy them. So, look, well done on him for making such a good effort and being so seemingly transparent.
Yeah, that's what I really
like.
That's
one of those things that is probably a bit different to a lot of other campaigns that have tried to go down this similar way.
Yeah.
And so far, it's been successful.
All you can do is be honest in this kind of thing. It's the best bet.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, apart from that, look, if you're into your mini games, well, Pirates, Iron League, Black Stadium, Vanguard of War, Alchemical Crystal Quest, Myth Dark Frontiers, they all sound the same. One that interested me a tiny bit, only because the other side, its logo looks almost exactly like the others, except instead of having a mouth, it's got an eye. But, you know, it's the plethora of those mini games, which they're not really my thing.
If you would.
Yeah, all right. Now,
anyway, that's all that's happening on... that's all. That's a small insight into what's happening on Kickstarter.
Okay. Now, we've only got a few minutes left, so should we be putting our conversation about the poll over to the next time we have a chat so we can really get to the meat of this issue?
Well, we don't have enough time for a song.
Well...
So we've got to...
Because what I could do is I could tell you about my most anticipated games for 2017 because I missed out on this conversation that you guys had a couple of weeks ago. And, guys, you've missed some stuff.
Yeah, we did.
Now, Leon, I just want to ask because I wasn't listening too close. Did you mention Gloomhaven?
No, I didn't.
Why did you not mention Gloomhaven?
Because it was on Kickstarter and I didn't back it because I was backing heaps of stuff at the time. Okay. Although it looks interesting.
Exactly. So Gloomhaven is the mega mini game that Leon's wet dream is made of and should have backed. It is also currently number one for the most anticipated game of 2017 on both Board Game Geek and Reddit, the last polls I've looked at.
Wow.
So I was very disappointed in you, Leon, generally, but more specifically in Gloomhaven.
Fair point.
Personally, the ones I'm really interested in are mainly Kickstarters that I've backed. The main one would be Feudum. Now, Feudum was only on Kickstarter a couple of weeks, month ago maybe, and it is what seems to be a very heavy Euro with, Mark,
yes,
beautiful art, almost cartoony, really bright and vibrant art, where there's comparisons to Terra Mystica and a lot of heavier games. That looks absolutely stunning.
Yeah, I don't know why it didn't grab me.
My concern is it's got too much going on, and it's tried to drag influence from so many other games. However, I have backed it, and I've backed the... They called it a big box game, whereas basically you were getting all of the things that they were condensing down into the one box, which I thought was great, because that was an additional pledge that they added on midway through the campaign.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure you mentioned Unfair, Leon, in your 2017.
Sure did.
Perfect. Oh, yeah. That's great. Now, what about Charterstone? Now, I didn't hear anyone mention Charterstone. What this is Stonemaier Games, who've got, let's be honest, a pretty good track record there with Euphoria and a little game called Scythe. They're releasing their first legacy game, which is what Charterstone is. Now, it's not going to go on through Kickstarter. It's going to go through a pre-order system where essentially you do a pre-order, and if you can't pre-order because you happen to live in Tasmania, you speak to your local game store and get them to do the order for you. So that in itself is a great mechanism to get yourselves into your local game store. But Charterstone, using the caliber of Stonemaier Games, I think will be a winner. They're talking about, you know, cards and stickers and that now typical legacy style mechanic. But the other thing that sets it apart is that the game doesn't end once the legacy has finished. It is just your personalised copy. You can then play the game infinitely after that, which is great. Mm. You're not just playing it for 10 or 20 sessions, then burning it or stapling it up on the wall and looking at it as a picture. It is, you've then got your personal game. You can then play that forever. I like that. Also, a little card game called The Fugitive by
Tim Fowers,
which is essentially then a little two-player card game that is all about after Burgle Brothers and you've stolen the loot, you're trying to get away. One player is playing the thief, one player is playing the marshal to try and catch him. Little 10-15 minute two-player game comes in, Mark, a little magnetically sealed box. Oh. Doesn't go meow, but it does look like a suitcase or a briefcase to match that loot. Pandemic Legacy Season 2, anybody?
No.
Yes.
Yeah, didn't hear you talk about it, Mark.
Because I guess there's so many games coming, it's not in my top, what did I have, 7 or something?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, that will be getting a lot of hotness when we know more. The couple of sort of little pictures you've seen, the board just looks completely different. It's almost like Pandemic mixed with Seafall, I think, and that's arguably where Seafall was. 2 months quickly. CO2 second edition by Vital, art by Ian. It's going to be looking awesome. A couple of photos have come up on Twitter. And lastly, Wasteland Express Delivery Service.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yes, you did.
That's because it's been dark for ages. I've heard not a word.
Exactly. By John Gilmore a la Dead of Winter.
Mm.
You're basically living in a Mad Max universe. It is pick up and deliver. You're trying to survive while also screw over people while sometimes working cooperatively. Hello, how is that not going to be awesome?
Look, there's so many games coming down the tube. We're going to be talking about them for the next aeons, I don't know. But look, we've got a rush. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for checking out our Facebook, our Instagram.
Over 1,100 followers on Instagram.
Yeah. Our website. We do have some YouTube videos. Everything else, Twitter. We will see you next week. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, yeah.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.